facts in place of all this bunk and fantastic stories. They're telling about the movement that's coming on, the red movement, you know, what the reds as they call it. And do what you can in every way to stop that. And then he went on and lectured and explained, you know, what socialism was, and there was nothing to be afraid of, and all this and that. And it was a splendid talk from the word go, you know. And Susie here, Nan's daughter, she took me into church, and she insisted I'd get right up towards the front, you know. And I wouldn't get up, clear up to some spot down the third seat there. And after he got a token, you know, gosh, you know, it affected me in such a way that I couldn't keep the tears. You know, I was surprised, mm-hmm. you know, to think. Hear a talk like that in church,
uh-huh.
and you know, I couldn't keep from nodding. He looked at me once. I think a speaker noticed that people like that in the audience. I wonder.
Surely.
And he watched me a lot, and then I turned my eyes over on the choir. They've got a fine choir, about 20 of them, and don't you know, every doggone one of them was looking at me. Well, I felt it wet on my chin. I thought, gee, I'll have to do something about that and mop my face and straighten up a little, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then next Sunday the same way. Of course, then I was prepared for it, you know. But I certainly shook that man's hand and told him it was the finest sermon I ever heard. And it was a long time before I expect to hear anything better.
Do you have a cigarette?
No, I don't smoke much. I've got some on the table. You can sample mine. I smoked one this morning. I don't.
Well, you've lived.
I read the an article here it's about a year ago, you know, saying that a little smoking is good for a good many things. And so I told my dad, I'm going to get a couple of packages of cigarettes, and the boys have some, and then I'm going to smoke too, you know. And then that is the first cigarette I've tasted, you know, since I quit smoking when I was 26 years old. I smoked several years there, and I made up my mind, this don't do me any good, I'll just quit it. And I thought I'd try one here, you know. And boy, it's altogether a different smoke now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cigarettes then, they were strong, and they were anything but good till you got used to them, you know. But now, you know, you pick up any of them, and they're mild, mm-hmm. and nice and pleasant. I like.
I've got a couple don't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything in excess is bad, I guess. Even goodness.
Okay.
Anything in excess is bad, even goodness.
Well, I don't know. I had them.
But to Hawaiian Islands.
He likes to sing that.
And that's the way with the majority of the preachers?
Or else just get frightened by hell.
We're burnt. Well, no, this fella certainly, he gives his sin.
Well,
you say you had two boats sunk under you?
Yeah.
But, you know, most of my relations and friends and were religious, and to attack their religion didn't get no place. So about 40, 50 years ago, I changed that, and I You know, I brought up a Lutheran and I learned a lot of the Bible by heart. Now, I can pick up some of that and slap it right back in the face, to substantiate my views of things. Now, I'll give you a little one here. It's on marriage. You listen to it, and I think, you know, the way I get it in towards the end, there's something to think about. You know, love and marriage is a wonderful thing, you know. And the way I wind it up, I get a little crack at what I'm trying to put across. Marriage is cooperative, number one. It was organized when the world first begun, part of God's wise plan to promote love and to propagate man. It has stood the test of time. Yes, it is divine. The only thing that can it mar is sin and selfishness, but it can rip the ship in twain, inflict untold amount of heartache and pain. It has done that again and again. But what is selfishness but just crude sin? Don't let it creep in. And if we with our mates play fair and abide by God's rules with reason and care, we'll have peace and joy and love to spare. And with our fellow man join hand in hand and let the Lord's Prayer act on us as a leaven so that we'll help to bring about conditions on earth as they are in heaven. You know?
I like that, the first cooperative.
Well, I like it, the way I wind it up, you know? To join hand in hand and let that Lord's Prayer have a little meaning to us that we'll help to bring these things about. You know, I think the Lord's Prayer is going to be answered, but it isn't going to be answered by the church people.
Well, we're going to be on earth as it is in heaven. I've always been for that.
Yeah, this could be.
Let us have a heaven on earth.
Heaven on earth, and if I had all the all of the Bible in my head, what I wanted of it, or should have, and to bring it out.
No, they took it into Liverpool.
Oh, he's a Lutheran. Yeah, he was a... But he got his eyes open. I can remember just as well as today when he told Mother, he said, I voted Republican ticket for the last time.
What disgusted him with it?
Huh?
What happened to him?
Well, I tell you, I don't know. I think I was about 8 or 9, or could have been 10 maybe, years old. And here I was going into Anoka, and I met a a Swede that is come from Chicago, you know. That is right after that hay market.
Oh.
And he was, he had the experience there, you know. And he's telling Dad the facts about it. We stopped and talked there with him for quite a while. And
was he there? Had he been there?
Yeah, he'd been working there, mind you. And he felt lucky that he wasn't one of the victims, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he told all about it. And he was looking for some land and trying to get out on the farm. And he said, you go on. We'll going one way, here the other, and he directed them to Swede neighbors of ours, and he said he can give you all the information about what you want. And he stopped in there. Well, he took up that, bought a 40-acre tract from the railroad company. You know, they were selling their land for about $2 and a half an acre on easy terms then. You know, they had so much of it. And that was like taking candy from the baby, you know, itself, and it didn't cost them anything. So, about that time, I don't remember whether it's the Plymouth or the Joneses out, started up in the city, you know, and he was a mechanic, and so he got in. You know, with them, he didn't stay on the farm. That's the last I seen of him.
So your father discussed that, the Haymarket.
Huh?
So then you discussed you heard your father discussing the Haymarket.
Yeah.
Thing,
uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it put him a thinking, you know.
Well, that was
he went into.
Was his ghost still?
No.
Carpenter, and all he got a day for that, or 10 hours, $1.25, mind you.
For 10 hours?
10 hours.
Oh.
Oh boy, I say, it is a tough proposition to make it, so he could see that working people needed to join together like the Swede was telling them, mm-hmm. You know. It was because they organized, that's the reason they got in trouble there.
Mm-hmm. That was for the 8-hour day. The Haymarket was for the 8-hour day.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Now
that's what they were fighting for, the mm-hmm. 8-hour day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course better pay too, no doubt.
Yes, uh-huh.
Because the pay.
But it was primarily the first struggle for the 8-hour
day. For the 8-hour, yeah, uh-huh. shorter hours.
Mm-hmm.
That
Well, I got to San Francisco. Well, I was
18 years old.
Populous.
Yeah, of course, then my dad died when I was 12 years old.
Uh-huh.
Got pneumonia, you know.
Did you ever hear Ignatius Donnelly speak? Did you ever hear Ignatius Donnelly during that time?
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't think I ever, no, I didn't hear him speak, you know. But, you know, he was one of the leading speakers, you know, in my younger days.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. He was a very, very prominent man in that movement, you know, for both farmers and the workers.
I just wondered if you remembered ever hearing him speak. He was
no,
he must have been
no.
an orator, you know, an
no.
old-fashioned orator. I've always wanted to write a book about him.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was a poet and a fantastic mind, you know.
On the ships in those days, when did organizations start on ships?
Well, we had.
I went out there to work when I was 16.
Oh, that's when you got mad because you had to plow so long and took your money.
Oh, no, that happened at home. That's what made me pull out to try to get something better.
Yeah,
you know, when I went up to Red River Valley,
mm-hmm.
I had an aunt that lived in Felton. She was running a boarding house, and her husband was a blacksmith, you know, had a shop there. Well, he's a carpenter shop and a blacksmith shop. And so when I quit, you know, I had just about enough money to buy that ticket for Felton after I'd It was a little over $7, you know, and I just had a few cents left. After working for about 3 months for this farmer, for $7 a month, I had to have some clothes, you know, shoes, you know. And, but it was just a few cents over what they... I went down to Noka and bought that ticket and pulled out. And the train left at 9 o'clock in the evening, you know, and I got out there about 9 or 10 in the morning. The train didn't go so fast then, you know.
Stopped and every little...
Yeah. Well, that was quite an interesting journey to me. I didn't sleep any that night, you know, and when I got to, I remembered every one of them stations back. Took it all in.
Is that the first time you did?
The first time I ever been on a train, mind you. And away from home. So, well. Come through with some nice poems. Sometimes at night my mind gets wandering, you know, back and forth, and you know, when you get past 81, you got quite a trail there. Yeah, and then the more I think about it, the more wide awake I get. And, well, now I get thinking, why not use this time for a little better and just wandering. So I made a few poems that way. But then after I get the poem done, then I wouldn't stop. Gee, I admire it. And gee, how could I, an ignorant thing like me, get off a nice poem like that, you know? And the first thing you know, I go to sleep, and then wake up and try to figure out how did I start? What's the first line? If I get the first line, then it'll go.
And you've forgotten it?
And forgotten it, absolutely. You know. I have to, after I make a poem, I have to do just like you would if you to learn it by heart, to remember it.
Mm-hmm. Or write it down.
No, I don't
write it down.
No. I just go over it and repeat it. Some of them I've had to repeat 10, 12 different times, you know. Mm-hmm. And then maybe next day have to try to go over it again and get it in my mind. You know, just like you did, trying to learn something by heart, you have to learn. Now, well, you've got to do the same thing even if you make the poem yourself.
Yes? Oh, I can't remember.
No, I wrote down a poem. I only wrote down one poem in my life. I picked up, I sat down by the table and there was a wrapping paper. And I started writing. I had something in view. And boy, you know, it come good. It just kept me busy writing. And I had quite a string there. I said, I better draw this to a close. It'll get too long. People won't. It's like a short poem. I ended up just in a good fashion as good, and it was good. I read it over, and boy, I said, that's swell. And I laid that, picked up that wrapping paper, folded it up, and laid it on top of the piano. Then I didn't think about that for a couple of days afterwards, and Joanne, my granddaughter, she's home, she's a pretty good housekeeper, you know, and the wrapping paper laying up on the piano, that didn't go, you know. Mm-hmm. And I asked her about it. Oh, yes, she said, I took that and I burned it up.
Oh.
Well, of course, I couldn't, never went after her about that, because that was, they were just a wrapping paper, folded up, the writing was inside, she wasn't to blame.
No.
And I couldn't say anything to her about it.
That's the only one you ever wrote down?
Yeah, the only one that's the only one I ever wrote. And believe me, it was a good one. And I hated that like everything, but it wasn't her fault, that was mine. If I had turned it the other way, maybe. But I should have put it away. I had plenty of places to put that without leaving
it
up.
You said before, the only one you forgot was the one when Hjalmar Peterson was elected, and the poem flew out.
Hjalmar Peterson, boy.
You see, he's going to run for something.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knocked me out of one poem, too. Sure.
Knocked you out of one poem?
Well, now I got another one. That's about my early, I think I'll tell you about what happened at our house when I was 12. You know, Father got the pneumonia. And you know, in them days, they didn't know very much about how to treat that. There was something the doctors could do, but then the old doctor we had, he certainly didn't know anything. He had a great big white beard, you know, and he looked stately and all that. Well, all Dad got from that man was a few cathartic pills, you know. That's about all he knew about to do.
He had pneumonia.
Yeah. Well, then his younger sister was a nurse in the city here. And we got her to come up, because she knew something, discovered that the fresh air was necessary and care and all that. So she applied her knowledge, took care of him as good as she could, you know. And then at the same time, when Father was sick, Mother brought from his youngest brother, you know. And between these two now, she took care of both of them, and he knew the time was up. He just fought for life to see the newcomer. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, he made it, and my aunt got the board washed and brought it in, held it up to him, and he said, "That fine boy." And she knew he was about all in. She went in, laid the baby down with Mother, and come back, and he kind of straightened out and said goodbye to us and just passed out. And she straightened him up and closed his eyes down the way he should be and put a penny over each one. I can remember that so well. Hmm. And put them in a cold room. There was no undertakers or anything like that for a country folks. Then you put them in a cold room. And she had a little money. We didn't have none. And we got a pretty nice hardwood coffin, you know, with the home. Right. Handles on them, four handles on them. Oh, two handles on each side. That was for $12. Hmm. And it's nicer wood casket than you can buy now for $350, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really nicer, you know. And then, well, that was $12, that was all the expenses was on his funeral. Uncle made the box, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that was, there's no undertaker expenses. Well, then, when mother died, that was quite a bit older. I was about 57 years old, I think, something like that. And I was appointed administrator. Nice. I got a nice coffin for you for $70 and everything. All the services went with it, you know. And well, I'm just telling you now how things have stepped up in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Now I am. It cost me $950 some odd dollars, you know. And I didn't get any too nice coffin. See, it cost money to die now.
You can hardly afford it.
No.
But then,
you mean the organization? Yeah, the organization
the...
broke up. When I was on San Pedro, I...
Oh, yeah,
sure.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's the biggest dedication.
Yeah, they have in Russia now. Sure, I've had that in mind for years, ever since I was 17 years old. I went to work, you know, English preacher. Well, he was born in Pennsylvania himself, but from English parents, and he had English drilled into him. You know, he was an Englishman in spite of that. Of course, he was American, and not only that, but when I worked for him, he was a socialist. You know. And then, you know, he worked with his father there in China for 5 years. And his dad and him both was what they called Christian socialists, see?
Mm-hmm.
And, come in, Susie. Christian socialist. And, well, I'll have to introduce you. That's my granddaughter Susie. You know, she's my next neighbor.
Yes, and I am.
When I step out through that door there, you know, I'm right next door to her house. And she comes here and calls me meals.
Oh,
you know,
she has a beautiful dad, blue eyes.
Grandpa, she says, breakfast ready or dinner's ready or
supper.
Did you
come home from school?
Yeah.
Oh, you go to that school up here?
No.
Uh-huh. Passed it on the road, I think. I bet this is a hard day to stay in school. It's more like spring, isn't it?
Yeah.
You didn't have any trouble finding mud to play in today, did you?
No, we could play in the mud.
Oh, don't you hunt up them places?
You can't.
Oh. That's what then. The kids used to do when I went to school was to hunt up the worst place we could find where the water was the deepest and then try to see if we couldn't wade across without getting the water into the boots, you know.
How old are you?
Five.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I have a granddaughter who's just 10. She lives in California.
Yeah, Beth? You You can come over for lunch anytime you want to.
For lunch now?
Yeah.
Oh, haven't you had your lunch?
Dinner.
Let's see, oh. What time is it? Oh, yeah. You know, Susie had a birthday here not so very long ago, and we had a big party here, and she got a watch, and I don't know what all she did get.
You got a watch?
Got a watch, yeah.
Isn't that nice?
I think it's
how lovely.
It's the Elgin Plus or something like that.
Oh, those are very nice. They last a long time.
Oh, boy, I see that.
Did you graduate from high school?
Well, then we'll go over and see Marion.
A couple of weeks anyhow, but crazy. We lost anyhow, I mean. See, the trouble with the LWW is one. Well, there's nothing in common, and there should be no ties or no contract. They want to strike, they'll go on a strike anytime they...
Facts in life I've learned, into my mind they've been burnt. Yes, I know poverty's sting. In my youth I was shielded under a poor mother's wing, who at the end of a dry year on shifting sand was left with seven little tots and a lean. Yes, I know. Capitalism will just about take a widow's last mite and employ a gentleman from the bar at the widow's expense to prove that that's right. Mammonized Americanism is sad fact, and to God it's just another abominable act. I know that we class ourselves as a Christian nation, though with our truth and goodness we have but few relations. The angels weep and the devil laugh, for most of us worship the golden calf. The banner of Mammon is flying high. Its bearers have transgressed all laws and at times disgraced our flag. Into war, want, and wars they have us dragged. Many of our good soldiers for that filthy rag has suffered, bled, and died, thinking they were serving their God, their country, and their flag.
The officials, the secretary has nothing to say. He's just a bookkeeper.
I made that myself. Oh, you couldn't make poultry like that. Well, I said that you like it. Yeah, that's very good. Well, I says, that's all I want to know. You won't hear anybody else repeat this poetry, or you won't read it anyplace. That I'm sure of.
Nobody can believe it.
And I made a few, and they all went good. And they finally made up their mind. You have the advantage of the lives that lived before you, what they learned, and you know, we're not all self-made like some imagine they are.
Mm-hmm.
No, we live in part of the other our ancestors. We reap some of their what they've learned, you know. You, it's kind of handed down to you.
Remember, we're made by each other, too.
Yeah,
I mean, the influence
sure.
is
yeah.
each other.
So life is wonderful. I got a lot of kick out of it. And I can't complain, because to me, life has been rich in a way. The only regret I have is, why didn't I marry my wife a few years sooner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I had, I told the doctor, you know, they discovered there were scars on her lungs. And I think when I married her and moved to Colorado, she'd had a touch of the TB, you know,
mm-hmm.
and moving out there, And in the early stage, it...
He didn't know it.
Yes. Now, after we had been married, three or four years, her next younger sister, that is a couple of years younger than her, she got sick and the doctor advised her to go out and live with us for a while. And she said, I think a change of climate will help. He probably knew that that's what it was, but he didn't tell her, and didn't tell anybody. And she stayed with us for about a year, a little over a year, and felt real good. And she went back, and you know, she hadn't been back more than about a month or two till she was sent to the hospital, you know, the TB hospital in towards the Ozarks. And she didn't stay there very long till they gave up hope for her and sent home to die, you know. So
she had TB.
So I think, you know, if I had married, well, I kept thinking, you know, why I know, I don't have to ask that question. I know that question too well. I wanted to have a little better home for her, you know. And she finally said, I'll come out and live in that cabin with you, and we'll scratch it out together. That's the way we done it, and it went good. You know, it was much better than I could do it alone.
Sure.
So
that's a wonderful.
That's the only regret I have. And if I had done that right.
How many years did you know her before you married her?
5 years. I met her in 1903, and then didn't get married in 1908. See.
And all the time you wanted to get married, but you didn't.
Oh yes, we wanted to get married because we were in love and both thought the world of each other, you know. And that wasn't just getting a little better financial.
That must be a wonderful thing to have that companionship all those years.
Oh yeah, it is wonderful. But you know, I have to be thankful for the years we had. If she could have lived now till next September, you know, we'd been married 50 years.
50 years.
That's a long time. And and she was younger than I was. Mm-hmm. Well, about 11 years younger. Mm-hmm. So she died before her time was up. But
she was only 70.
But you know, if she had. The doctor said if she had had an examination sooner, that they could have done something for her. But it went too long, you know, and these scars, the infection set in, and not only in the lungs, but in the bronchial tubes.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And he said it was just too far gone to stop. Mm-hmm. It, you know, to just...
What symptoms did she have? Did she have a cough?
Oh yes, she had a cough, and she blamed that
bronchitis or?
Yeah. Bronchitis, that isn't exactly the...
Asthma,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she insisted she had, and the doctor told her, no, that isn't the trouble.
Well,
housewives, don't you sigh, 'cause we'll roll back the prices in a left eye. And the next little song is the outline of a long, long novel, a terrible novel. Four lines. Papa loves Mama. Mama loved men. Mom's in the graveyard. Papa's in the pen.
The horseshoe song.
You Nashville boys that were kidnapped for this affair. I found a horseshoe. I found a horseshoe. I picked it up and nailed it on the door. It was a rusty and full of a nail hole. Good luck, 'twill bring to you forevermore. The man who owned the horse, he lived in New York. The man who owned the horse, he lived in New York. The man who owned the horse, the man who owned the horse, the man who owned the horse, he lived in New York. The horse that wore the shoe, his name was Mike. The horse that wore the shoe, his name was Mike. The horse that wore the shoe, the horse that wore the shoe, the horse that wore the shoe, his name was Mike. So complicated.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Sandberg. Thank you very much.
I should have mentioned I heard that 65 years ago in Galesburg, Illinois, and I never have heard it since, but I've gone on singing. It's my pleasure to be here, feller. And what comes next?
What comes next? First, Mr. Sandberg, I would like to thank you, sir, for being with us tonight. Frankly, I was agreeably surprised when you accepted my invitation.
Why? Why should that be?
Well, you know, Burl, I'm liable to say anything, because I'm a pretty brash guy, you know.
Well, of course, I'm not brash. I'm rash. Brash? A rash is when you don't quite know what you're doing. That's why I'm here.
I wish you were here more often, Mr. Sandberg, because television could use more people like a Carl Sandberg.
Well, I think it's doing fine without me. TV is making great contributions to our culture without me at all.
Really? In what way, Mr.?
Well, it's driving people to reading books, and us authors, we like that.
I was off for 2 years and I read a book. Mr. Sandberg, you speaking of books, you wrote over 1.5 million words about Abraham Lincoln in your 6-volume biography. Is there something you can tell our audience tonight about Lincoln the man?
Many things, of course. It's going to be always going to be one of the unique facts in American history that Lincoln was the first authentic humorist to occupy the White House.
Really?
He was a man of laughter. He used to say that a good story was medicine to his bones.
I'll bet some of the jokes that I tell amuse Mr. Lincoln, huh?
Well, he knew nearly all the ancient jokes of mankind. Of course, as everybody knows, some of yours go back to Noah and the Ark.
Sorry, I brought up the subject. You say that Mr. Lincoln was quite a wit, is that right?
Once during a public debate, he said of his opponent's argument, "It got down so thin, it was thin as the soup, as a soup made from the shadow of a starved pigeon."
Still good. I think I'll use it next week. Mr. Sandberg, there is a speech or a passage from one of the speeches of the retired justice in your great novel, Remembrance Rock. I wish you to recite it to our audience tonight. I think those are the kind of words that I think that we all should remember. Would you do it for us, please?
You may bury the bones of men and later dig them up to find that they have moldered into a thin white ash. an ash that crumbles in your fingers. But their ideas won. Their visions came through. Men and women who gave all they had for their country and wish they had more to give. How can we say they are sunk and buried? They live in the sense that their dream, the American dream, is on the faces of living men and women today.
I have one more favor to ask. We always try to do and give the best of everything on the Kraft Music Hall. Billy May has some of the finest jazz musicians in the world, and inasmuch as we have the country's greatest poet here, would you read some of your poetry to jazz? Would you do that?
You are inferring that jazz is fashionable again, has come back. Back in 1919, all of the great jazz men, the originators of it, were coming on the Illinois Central up from New Orleans and Memphis, and we were under their influence. Ben Hecht wrote some very good interviews, some great interviews with them. He had them, when they meant interpretation, they'd say interpretations. And some of my poems were done to a jazz background.
That's wonderful.
One of them titled Jazz Fantasias, 1919. That's nearly 40 years ago. You were 40 years younger then. A 10-year-old boy, if anybody saw.
I was a year old. Now, that's just what we want to hear, Mr. Sandberg. Authentic jazz and honest poetry. Our stage, the musicians, and the audience are all yours.
Drum on your drums, bat on your banjos, sob on the long, cool, winding saxophones. Go to it, oh jazzmen. Swing your knuckles on the bottoms of the happy tin pans, let your trombones ooze, and go hush and hush and hush with the slippery sandpaper. Moan like an autumn wind, high in the lonesome treetops. Moan soft like you wanted somebody terrible. Cry like a racing car slipping away from a motorcycle cop. Bang, bang, you jazz men, bang all together. Drums, traps, banjos, horns, tin cans. Make two people fight on the top of the stairway and scratch each other's eyes in a clinch tumbling down the stairs. And the rough stuff. Now a Mississippi steamboat pushes up the night river with a boom. And the green lantern's calling to the high, soft white stars. A red moon rides on the humps of the low river hills. Go to it, oh jazzmen. The moon is a lovely woman, a lonely one, lost in a silver dress, lost in a circus rider's silver dress. Listen a while, the lake by night is a lonely woman, a lovely one, circled with birches and pines, mixing their green and white among stars, shattered in spray, clear night. I know the moon and the lake have twisted the roots under my heart, the same as a lonely one, a loved woman, in a silver dress, in a circus rider's silver dress.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sandberg. That was really delightful. I'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, with our next guest after these words from Ed Herlihy.